Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, September 29th, 2011. This week, the main science topic, I'm going to continue with what I talked about last week. I talked about basically tidal waves in the Earth's surface caused by passing large celestial objects throughout the history of the Earth, some not so far in the distant past. Some people, in looking at an author like Velikovsky, say he concentrates on what I call the Venus event, the Venus comet coming through the solar system and becoming a planet. And a lot of people confuse this, call it Planet X and Nibiru, and it was a Planet X type of event. The thing I always stress is that there were many, many, many events like this in Earth's history. This was just one example, and if you understand the science of how the solar system works, you'll realize that, yes, that was one event, but that was just one piled on top of many in history. So what I'm going to talk about this week, the topic last week, I called it the tortured Earth. The Earth has simply been tortured throughout its history. Standard science wants to tell you that the Earth just jumped up and did all this by itself. The plates are floating around and moving around the planet, that there were tidal waves, and they can't explain how coal beds formed. How did all this massive material get piled up and all in one spot, and then it's not in any other spots? Coal beds are very concentrated areas. And so none of standard science makes any sense at all. If you look, if you pick it apart and ask real logical questions, none of it makes any sense. How did coal beds form in layers that had the same type of plant material many times, and then all of a sudden the plant material changes in the next layer of coal that is brought into an area? And it's concentrated in certain regions and not in others. So the plants didn't grow where the coal beds were. That's my point, that the material to make the coal bed was brought in from someplace else. The standard story is that fern forest grew and decayed, and then this was compacted. But like Velikovsky pointed out in the 1950s, if you take a piece of coal and look at it, it has all of the leaves compressed in layers and layers and layers. Any layer of coal that you pick out is going to have leaf fossils in it, and they can still identify if it was a maple tree. It'll have chunks of wood fossilized in it. It'll have pieces of other material, rocks mixed in. It's filled with oil and all kinds of chemicals. So the point is that standard science can't explain this. Some coal beds don't have any oil at all in them. They're very dry. And so the point is, that's just one example of the type of things we see on planet Earth. So anyway, I'm going to be talking this week about waves. I'm going to go into the details of wave motion, wave activity. And I ended last week by talking about the massive tidal waves rolling through the surface, the crust and the mantle of the Earth, and how these come piling into an existing mountain range, and that energy then pushes on that existing mountain range, causing it to change. And if you go to the big mountain ranges, you see this. You see tormented, smashed, jagged, twisted rock formations. You'll go across one, and then you come across another. There is no way in the universe that plate tectonics explains what you see. The waves came in from the north, they came in from the south, they came in from the east and west in all different directions. They came in from the northeast, the northwest, and they mixed together and pushed and shoved until these mountains look like this contorted mess that we see today. Then the Earth shifted, and you'll find places like the Rocky Mountains with glaciated, carved-out valleys where glaciers worked over, a very long time, thousands and thousands of years, snow piling up, and then that pushing down through the glaciated valley washing that, scraping and pushing that rock away. It's not the same type of glacier that sat on the North American continent called the Laurentian Shield, which was literally the North Pole at the time. And when the Earth shifted and that melted, it tore out the Mississippi River Valley. It tore out the Red River Valley that flowed north. It blew out a large channel out of southwestern Colorado, and it flowed off to the Gulf, the Baja Peninsula area through New Mexico. There's a wash area that's probably 50 miles wide. This was not, and right now there's no water there at all. It's a dry bed. It's so big you can see it from outer space. So how did these things form? So that's what I'm going to go into on this show in the Science Hour, the Tortured Earth Part 2, talking about the wave action and mountain building. But first of all, I've got some announcements I got to go through here. I'll quick talk about the sun. Sunspot 1302 kicked out a couple X flares this past week. And there was a lot of excitement and chatter about it, but these did not come near Earth, which is usually the case. It's a very large sunspot. It's actually a linear sunspot group, kind of connected, so it's not really a single sunspot. It's a whole group of sunspots. They're giving it a single designation, 1302. There was a little bit of aurora activity. I was in prime locations along the north U.S. border over the past week, and I didn't see any auroras. They were seen a little bit out of northern Minnesota, Michigan, Maine. These were places that were listed on the spaceweather.com site, but always very far in the north and just off the horizon. So people saw a little bit of a tinkling of northern lights. But the report is that we have not had significant auroral activity this year, this season. If they make a big deal out of these few little curtain auroral activities that are so far north, that they're only visible along the horizon from the very northern borders of the border states, the northern border states, then it's like blowing your horn for not much at all. And so that's what's going on. They're trying to grab any piece of news and make it sound like the sun is going crazy. And it's really not. A couple X-class flares is not unusual for this time. But the point is we could potentially be hit by those around the time, actually, that this show is going on, if that 1302 kicks out some flaring activity. But the point is, even with that, even with some X-flare activity, it's still far, 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 very far below average for the last solar cycle. Going back all the way to 2002, there was a huge double maximum, and that was kicked into place because of a comet called Hale-Bopp that cruised through the solar system for about 6 years, building up the energy of the sun and causing the solar capacitor to discharge. And so that weakened the solar capacitor. Now we head into a solar minimum that was extended far beyond its days. There were something like well over 600 days without a single sunspot. So the sun is way out of kilter, let's put it that way, but way below energy standards. So it's going to take the sun a long time to build back up, to get back up to the energy states that we saw before Hale-Bopp, and the regularity of the sunspot cycle and all of that. It's not equal to what was seen before, which tells us that the sun is a variable energy source. The solar spectrum has changed significantly. There's more energy being put out in X-rays, and less out in, energy in the infrared and visible ranges of the sun. It's a very strange, and the sun is supposed to be a black body, which, why should that change? According to standard theory, the heat source is in the center. By the time all that heat comes up to the surface, over a million year period, that heat is going to be equalized until you have a pure black body. It's called black body in physics. It's the concept that if you take something and heat it up to a certain temperature, there's going to be a prescribed perspective, very predictable. And the sun, according to that standard theory that the nuclear core is the heat source, there should be a very standard spectral curve to the solar output, and it is anything but standard, and it changes. It's changed in the last 10 years. This should tell those people that still believe that, once again, fairy tale theories, fairy tale science pawned off on the public, that the core of the sun is the source of heat for the sun. It just can't be possible. There's so many contradictions. The heat source of the sun is in its upper atmosphere. The fusion is in the upper atmosphere. And the sun is a renewable energy source. It has to be refueled with hydrogen. If you look at the amount of hydrogen in the sun and the heat output and mass output, in converting that mass to energy over 4.5 billion years, it doesn't add up, folks. The sun wouldn't even be there today. So and these are just little problems that solar physicists seem to ignore. At any rate, so back to sunspot 1302. It was in my book, nothing to write home about. But I'm also should mention, I've talked about before, that they're waiting for a solar flare to shut down the U.S. power grid. And with any minimal X-class flare coming at Earth, I would say that would be the point at which they would pull the plug and say, okay, United States, the gig is up. But just remember, watch, because let's take an example of a rolling power outage that occurred from southern LA down to the coast, down to the Mexican border, and then on both sides of the Mexican border, on the Mexican side and the U.S. side, and I think that was a little experiment just to test how we could pull the levers and shut off the power system. It didn't affect L.A., mind you, just south of L.A. down to the border and then a couple hundred miles east. I believe it ended at Yuma, Arizona, along the border. So at any rate, that in my mind was just a little experiment to see how the people react, etc. But and of course they never could find a real cause for that. But the point that I'm trying to make is that I predicted a while ago that the next solar flare that comes at Earth, that's even remotely close to an X-class flare, they are going to pull the switch on the U.S. power grid, and the reason they're going to do it is because it's the biggest control mechanism on the planet. And what we'll find is interesting is over there in Europe, over there in Russia, they're not having a problem. Do you think that X-class flare is selective to the United States? No, it's not. So the thing you're going to notice is there's going to be a lot of other countries that have their power. Why just the U.S., the good old U.S. of A, losing its power? It just, that's not the way solar flares work. They're not selective, boys and girls, and U.S. government mill boys. And so, and they're not going to get the rest of the world to go along with this. They might think they're going to, but no, not everybody's at the time when the economies are crashing and all of that. Those countries aren't going to go along with the U.S. mill boys' little plan here, along with the New World Order. So at any rate, that'll be the indication to you that it is man-made. It's not due to a solar flare. So expect that. That's all I can tell you. It's coming. Just a quick note on products here. We've got quite a bit of freeze-dried food in stock, and that changes daily. So go there. I know people are very happy that this is still available. I can't tell you tonight what we're going to have tomorrow, but if it's on the homepage, it's available. And in a couple weeks, we're going to get some more things coming along, that things we haven't seen for a while. We're going to see those in a couple of weeks. So if there's something that's not there, make sure you come back in terms of the freeze-dried food. Mountain House, 10-ounce cans, sold 6 in a case. Right now I'm going to go into the new CD, and I'm going to go through the title list. And this will then be posted on the webpage, but the mailing of the CD has gone out in waves, and so I believe the majority of people that ordered should have it in their hand by now. And I thank everybody for the pre-order. This is very important. It's a real sign to me that I've got a solid audience out there. The number of these CDs that sold before the title was released, and that's a confidence factor. It really tells me something, and when you receive these CDs and see them, you're going to understand. But tonight I'm releasing all of the titles of the topics. There are, there are 21 topics, titles on the first CD. It's a two CD set. On the second CD, there are 12 titles. And so I'm going to go through these very quickly so that you understand what is contained on these CDs. Now, the idea is that this is the physics interpretation based on my scientific work, the plasma discharge comet model, the workings of the electrical workings of the solar system, interpreting the ancient texts, what the ancients tell us, so that you will know in the future, if anything like this happens, you can put these CDs in your computer. They're all MP3 files. You can have them on an MP3 player, and you can play them, and that's when this information is really going to be important. That's when it's going to make sense, and it's highly, highly detailed. So anyway, with that said, the two CD set that, now I'm announcing the titles, and I'm going to go into full-scale promotion on this, but understand that as soon as I announce these titles, there's going to be a tidal wave of copycat disinformation crew garbage that they're going to try and put out to try and negate my work here. Okay, so with that being said, the CD number one, there's an introduction. Then title two, Planet X Objects. I go into detail about the Planet X Objects. I talk about the many Planet X objects. And then I give a brief history of celestial disasters. That's topic number three. And these are all divided and listed by title on the CD in order, so you would listen to these in order. By the way, I believe there is a total of 18 hours of lecture on these two CDs. So this was a monumental effort on my part, and this is something that's going to be invaluable to people if we ever have an event like this. Okay, so topic three, a brief history of celestial disasters, and that goes way back in history. Okay, now the detailed events, the Noah's Flood event, and I describe that in detail and give these, mind you, these are all first describing the event, which in the case of Noah's Flood we're all familiar, but what really happened there? Okay, the number five topic, the Moses event. Remember that the Moses event followed thousands of years after the Noah event. The Old Testament is mainly a lineage document of the people that were born, the families, the lineage, but leading between Noah and down to Moses, and the Israelites. And then the Moses event talks about all of the events happening at that time. What were these caused by? And of course, these were large comets coming through the solar system. And I make the point that the Noah event was very different from the Moses event. Okay, then I talk about ancient Egyptians. That's number six. Number seven, the tale of Atlantis. Number eight, the physics of the cauldron. Number nine, the ancient Mayans. Number 10, the modern Mayans. What did the modern Mayans carry from the ancient Mayans? And what information can we discern from the modern Mayas about the ancient Mayas and the calendars, etc. Then I talk about Mexico. This is number 11. Mexico and the ancient Americas. Number 12, modern myths and quacks. Number 13, the physics of Tesla. Number 14, now 14 through 17, a four-part series on the science of the many Planet X objects. Number 18 through 21, this is still on disc number 1, the psychology of Planet X, a four-part series, very important, talking about, it's a very powerful tool to understand the mindset, and understand Planet X from a physical, mental point of view. So anyway, that's 21 topics, 13 hours, that's on disc number 1. Here's disc number 2, Velikovsky, and on number 2 I tried to concentrate on Velikovsky and the Venus event, and then I end with the physics of Earth changes. Number 10 topic is the physics of Earth changes, and I go down the laundry list of physical Earth changes, and I give the physical explanation of what caused them, how it's related to the physics of comets, of solar system dynamics, of electrodynamics of the sun. As I said, this is a very packed scientific dissertation describing ancient history and what the ancients told us. So disc number 2, topic number 1, Velikovsky. Number 2, the physics of the Venus event. Number 3, credibility, why Velikovsky had to be buried, secret societies and control. Let me read that again. Part 3 is credibility, why Velikovsky had to be buried, secret societies and control. Number 4, 5, and 6 are interviews that I did in March of 2008 with a guy named Warner. His name is Warner Sizemore. He was the personal assistant to Velikovsky throughout Velikovsky's tour until the day Velikovsky died. And these are two very extensive interviews, a couple hours worth of interviews, a three-part series interview with Warner Sizemore, Velikovsky's personal assistant, that I did with Warner in April of 2008, a very dear friend. Okay, and then part 7 of disc 2, what did Velikovsky really say? Number 8, the axioms of astronomy. I talk about the standard science and the fairy tale science they're trying to pawn off on the public. Number 9, of calendars and time scales, the very complex issues of calendars. And that's what Velikovsky was working with. Number 10 is a very important topic, and it's extensive. I go down the laundry list of Earth changes, and I give the physics of how these things happen, why they work the way they do, and why the Earth looks the way it looks. Then part 11, summary and conclusions. Number 12, epilogue, was the Venus event related to the Noah or the Moses event? And I go into an analysis of the Noah and Moses event. Which one was related to the Velikovsky Venus event? And when I get done, you'll find that it's very clear which was which. So anyway, as I said, 18 hours of lectures on my part, 2 CD set, and only, 11.95. So I'm very happy with this, finally announcing the titles, and it's something that I know the public is just going to it's going to be one of the most valuable things you own. The reason I did the 2 CD set is so you physically have these in your hands. If ever there is an event, you can put these on your MP3 player, put them in the computer, whatever, and you're going to have a tremendous amount of information on the physics of what is going on during a Planet X type encounter. Okay, so anyway, with that said, let me move on to this past week, the September 27th, Tuesday. Top NASA officials and Obama and all kinds of other top officials during a congressional break or government break, I don't know what they call it, but went through a maximum readiness drill at the Denver airport with people running around. They called it a, when you pull the hammer back on a gun, that means it's ready to shoot. These people were running around with live guns, live bullets, with the hammers ready to shoot. This was an all-out alert. So this tells me that, baby, things are ready to come down. So at any rate, as the and that just tells me, too, that the New World Order is very fragile. They're very paranoid. And all I can tell you is things are getting strange out there. The strangeness factor is going through the ceiling. I want to clarify what I talked about last week. I made a comment. I was talking about the Japanese earthquake, and then I talked about the underground cities being bombed in underneath Virginia and Colorado, which is interesting because this week it seems like they're still in use. But I talked about the earthquakes and these being not earthquakes, natural earthquakes, but man-made with nuclear bombs, that part of these underground cities were bombed. And I said, well, that would be a good thing, and I just want to clarify, I was not implying that the destruction of Japan was a good thing. The thing I was saying was that the underground cities in Colorado and Virginia, destroying those monsters, which are simply New World Order facilities, that was a good thing. But now you have to understand something also. After reviewing it and thinking about it, I'm always looking for that second unobvious point of view. And I want to give you first an example. Remember in the old bank robber or the old westerns, they'd get together and there were a group of people and they would rob a bank or a stagecoach or whatever it was. And then after it was all over, one of the guys double-crossed the rest of them, took the money and shot the rest of them and made off with all the loot. So at any rate, I'm seeing that kind of thing here. And who would have access to these underground cities? And at first I thought this was a retaliative effort by some other group, group B, that somehow had access to do in or get nuclear weapon into these underground cities and set it off. And then I thought to myself, now wait a minute. First of all, that would be pretty hard to do. And second of all, I looked at this as kind of like the possibility anyway that this was like the old bank robber movie in which the New World Order got the U.S. military, got the government here to do all of these things, and then at the last minute, they didn't need those guys anymore, so they're blowing up their underground cities as a way of sending them a message that they're not needed anymore, if you see what I mean. It's the double cross coming at the end. And this is the kind of thing that I expected to see. The people double crossing each other and then heading for the hills. Because you have to understand that when this comes down, there are going to be factions and groups that are going to say, hey, I don't need those top guys over there. They're defenseless. We're defending them. We can go take them over. And you better believe those guys on top are paranoid enough to know that. So I'm seeing this as possibility not a retaliatory second group, but simply the people on top destroying the people that they use to get to the point to structure the United States to the point it's at today, ready to come tumbling down. And once their usefulness is done, then they get rid of them at the tune of about 30 or 50,000 of them at a time. So if you understand what I mean, it sounds to me like a bad, like the old bad bank robber deal gone bad, where somebody is turning on the rest of them and destroying them before the final curtain falls, if you understand what I mean. So, and I wanted to double clarify that when I said that these bombings of these cities was a good thing, I did not, and I want to make it very clear, I did not want I didn't want to say that the bombing and the tidal waves, the man-made events in Japan were a good thing. That was not a good thing. And so, and I don't think I listened to what I said last week. I didn't think that, but I heard some comments, and then the people said you should clarify that, so I'm clarifying it. Here's something just in. There's a federal RFP for a sentiment analysis and social media monitoring solution. In other words, the federal government has put out an RFP, a request for proposal, for someone to develop a software package that will go out to Twitter and YouTube and Facebook and all of these social medias and gather information and see what people are saying and send trend charts to the people on top in the federal government, of course, who represent the New World Order. But they want to see what people are chattering about. What are people talking about? What's the sentiment? And then if there's a trigger level that's met, then an instant report would be sent to some central location where then they could react to it. What a bizarre world we're living in, to the point where, people ask me if I have a Facebook. It's just like, no. I don't want anything to do with Facebook or Twitter or any of these. And anybody that uses those, buyer beware. But get a clue. These are not fun things. The reason this guy from Facebook is a billionaire is because the government and the CIA bought him out and run this operation. He's just a figurehead. Very disposable figurehead if he ever gets out of line, but as long as he gets his billions, I'm sure he's a happy kid. Whatever. Here's something that's come in, and I'll just tell you that people are getting reports from all over the country as they travel in their car. Weeks later, many times, they will get a bill from a city, from a municipality, from a state, saying, you owe us so much money for traveling on our road. There was no sign, there was no place to pay, and all of a sudden they're getting a bill because they drove on a highway. Their license plate is recognized, it goes to the state of origin, and they send you a bill in the mail. You owe us this much money because you drove on our road. So, and this is because of the private corporations that are coming in and buying roads that have been built with public money and buying those roads from the state, and who knows what kind of underhanded deals are going on here. But anyway, just to give you a clue, if you travel into another state or some area, you could likely get a bill in the mail for being on somebody's road. Sounds like highway robbery to me. Legal, of course. On Comet Elenin, the Comet Elenin stuff is just building up and crescendoing, and it's very clear who's doing this. You look at the telltale signs, and this is all very professionally put together. They got some bozos out there that are being the front men, but claiming that God is directing them and who knows what all, but trying to take, for example, terminology from my work and just a whole collage of information about 2012 and the Mayan calendar and the government is opposed and the hiding information and putting this all together, and they're starting to tweak into God sent me and God is doing this and the day of repentance is nigh, all of this. So at any rate, I just wanted to point out one thing. September 26th, which has passed, was one of their predictions that the sun would be blotted out and there would be tremendous earth disasters. Well, September 26th has come and gone and nothing has happened, folks. And so this is something that's, unfortunately, I have to waste my time covering this topic and rebuffing it, but it's important because it shows you that the tremendous amount of effort being put into this to turn people and to draw their attention away from reality. So at any rate, just wanted to mention that. I think I've covered, let me just, also vaccinations for kids, it's being promoted in newspapers and advertisements at other commercial locations. Come on and get little Johnny and little Susie vaccinated. It's free. They're giving it away, sponsored by such and such a group. It's coming from schools being pressured into putting this out, but with no requirement for anybody to do this. They're trying to just con people into doing this. Also, I saw this week where, thanks to some information that came to me from a fan, that the government is pushing very hard. In fact, let me pull this up. I'll read some of the titles. This is FDA set to ban your supplements. This is just a couple weeks ago. And let me see what the article is. It's such a long URL that I can't really read it. But if you Google this, I'm sure you'll find information that the FDA is set to ban your supplements. What the FDA is, they're under strict guidelines of a law passed in 1994 by the federal government, preventing them from restricting sales of supplements. So what the FDA is doing now, so that they can basically protect the pharmaceutical companies and get everything else off the market, so that the pharmaceutical companies will be able to sell their drugs and have them as a complete monopoly for the so-called health industry. What the FDA is doing is they're creating new test standards for any type of supplement, requiring that animals in some cases eat their body weight every day of the supplement, and trying to get some little inkling, and they're going to try and put this on the sales on the company. Say they're selling fish oil or vitamins or other types of natural supplements. They're going to require that these companies force feed animals enormous amounts of this supplement, thousands and thousands of times more than anybody would ever take, and then say, oh, look, there's a study here that says something's wrong with this supplement. It causes such and such a side effect. Therefore, we're going to ban it. And that's what the FDA is doing right now. So at any rate, I'll just tell you, this looks like it's from the internet. Mercola.com, Mercola.com. And it's from a Dr. Mercola. So you can check that out. That's the reference I'll give. But you can look this up. I'm sure you can Google this. It says, Red Alert, FDA set to ban your supplements. Anyway, I just wanted to give that. I normally don't give out websites, but sometimes you just have to talk about these things to create awareness. Just another quick mention. NASA, this is so ridiculous. NASA was monitoring a satellite coming into the atmosphere. They still claim that it went into the Pacific Ocean in the South Pacific, and they gave kind of a range area where this thing supposedly fell. However, it was photographed over Colorado, then over Minnesota, so the thing probably fell in somewhere in central Canada. We're not sure, but these photographs came in at the exact time when this thing would have been coming in the atmosphere. But NASA, I just looked on spaceweather.com, NASA is still claiming that this thing came in over the South Pacific. Well, the question with these satellites, was there a nuclear load? Was there a nuclear reactor in there with nuclear fuel? A lot of this is not clear. A lot of this is not really made clear by these agencies. But it's amazing how you get contradictory information. NASA, never a straight answer. And, of course, on my webpage, I've been calling them NISA, N-I-S-A, instead of NASA, N-I-S-A, indicating nothing in space agency. Okay, well, I don't want to waste any more time. I want to get into the science topic this week, the Tortured Earth Part 2. Oh, by the way, I'm not going to go into any more of this comet at Ellen and stuff. Somebody's claiming there's two suns coming up, and they have videos of it. This is all garbage, folks, and there are people out there promoting it. What is not disturbing is that it's out there, because there's all kinds of quacks running around. What's disturbing is the amount of press coverage that this is getting. But anyway, there's a lot of effort being put into promoting this on the internet. And so also I should mention that because of the twist that's being put into this, this is the day of redemption, this is the day of the Lord type of stuff, that they're pushing for mass suicide groups out there. And this is the end result that the crazy lady talks to Alien May 15, 2003. The whole point of that was to have mass suicides, and I cut that off at the pass because of my announcements a number of days before, and I said, this is very clear that this is a hoax, that NASA is behind it, that the big orange ball that would come up on May 15, 2003 was the full moon, an unusual orange full moon that only NASA would have known about when that campaign started many years earlier, and that if NASA did not use its power of the press to dispel that rumor, that they would be personally responsible for the suicides that happened May 15th, 2003. And you know what? They backed down because they knew I was right. I had it all over my webpage, all over the media. And NASA had one choice, and that was to back down and shut down that series of mass suicides. Because here would be the story. Crazy lady talks to aliens, predicts Planet X, May 15, 2003, but it's only a moon coming up over the horizon, a full moon, and all these people commit suicide, and that's to defame the Planet X topic. They spent, that was planned in 1995. That program was planned and underway, and it didn't surface until around 1999, and then around the year 2000, it started to build and build and build. And how why that ever got the time of day, it's kind of like the Comet Elenin thing, but what do they want? They want a headline feature that promotes crazy people, Comet Elenin, mass suicide, Planet X, Nibiru, electric concepts of the solar system. They want this, everything in the kitchen sink in this baby, and when those suicides pull off, then they can plaster it all over the front page of newspapers, and guess what? It'll destroy the image of anybody that ever talks about Planet X. You see what I mean? So that's what Comet Elenin, and they're pounding on this. It's structured by the same people that did the crazy lady talks to aliens thing. In fact, they had the crazy people talk to alien, thing about Comet Elenin. So anyway, it's important to pound on this on my show because of the long-term the strategies that these people go through and the amount of effort they go through to pound this into the public so that they can destroy topics that are important for the public to know about. Okay, at any rate, The Tortured Earth Part 2. Well, I'm going to talk about waves today. And we've all been to the beach, we've all seen waves breaking on the ocean coastline as the waves roll in and they kind of break and they don't look like waves, they do something kind of funny, I'll be talking about that. Or we see surfers and they're doing the pipeline, they get into this rolling wave that's rolling over and they can go down through that wave. But anyway, what's the wave doing? It's building up and it's breaking over the top of itself. So let's analyze what happens to water waves. They build up over the ocean. There's a force, there's something that creates those waves. Something that makes them move. Okay, so the waves, in the case of water waves, it's the wind. Okay, but also in the case of water waves, it's the moon. It's that tidal wave of the moon. I talked about last week that as that moon is up above us, as the earth spins underneath, that tidal wave is moving at the rate of about 1,000 miles per hour as the earth spins underneath the moon. That's because the earth is spinning, the equatorial speed of the earth is about 1,000 miles an hour. So you have a gravitational body near earth that's causing a tidal wave to move around the earth in the water oceans, and that causes the tides to go up and down. And it's not enough to make a splash or breaking wave, but if you had a large passing object coming by at a higher speed, that the wave that would go into the ocean would be much higher and it would be moving much faster, and now when that wave hits the shore, it's going to come sweeping across the land. It's not just going to be a 15-foot raise as the earth tides are. It could be 100, a 200-foot wave that runs way inland and comes sweeping back out. This is what the ancients talk about. They talk about, the Mayas talk about Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent of the night sky, that washed, that took the oceans on his back and washed way inland and caused great tidal waves. The Colburn talks about it. Velikovsky talks about it. On all the civilizations around the world talk about this type of event as a big comet comes by Earth. Okay, so those are the waves in the ocean. Now let's talk about the waves in land, because that same effect would cause literally a wave in the landmass of the Earth, which now you have to understand that the land in the mantle and crust of Earth is very much a fluid. You know, you look at the Rocky Mountains or you look at rocks and you pick up a piece of rock and you go, wow, that's a solid piece of rock. I mean, I couldn't break that. Or and standard geology talks about plates, plate tectonics. And it gives you the impression that there's a big plate there, and if you picked up that plate, it would all hold together. And it's really not true. If you could take a big chainsaw or a saw of some kind and cut into the earth and cut a, just say a 1 mile by 1 mile square out of the surface of the mantle and the crust of the earth, and you had a big crane and you tried to pick that up, it would all crumble into 1,000 pieces. It's not a plate. It's not a structure. It's not a hard plate on the scale of the earth. And so the point is that as this wave, as this large comet comes by Earth during a close encounter, it doesn't come crashing into Earth, but it would come by, and the wave that's set up in the mantle in the crust of the Earth acts very much like a fluid. And so now imagine a 200-foot or 300-foot tidal wave of land moving across the earth at 1,000 or 1,500 miles per hour. Imagine the energy in that as it comes across the open plains. That's rising up and coming down, and you can see this large wave moving across the land, breaking the earth, consuming buildings, consuming, cracking, and then coming back together and forming together. Now, here's something I've done extensively throughout my career, is I've visited mountain ranges. And when you start coming across the open plains, typically you look at the mountain ranges of the earth, you have a flat plain and then a mountain range, and then a flat plain and then a mountain range. And so then all of the mountain building occurs in one spot. As I said last week, this wave comes across that open stretch of prairie and flatland, and it keeps moving. That wave has got a tremendous amount of energy in it. Okay, now let's examine the ocean water wave and what happens. As the ocean water wave, let's take, just say, a 10-foot swell in the ocean. These are the waves out in the ocean. They've got a wavelength of maybe 20 feet, and they're 10 feet high, something like that. Just a standard ocean water wave. That's moving along for thousands of miles, possibly, and all of a sudden it comes into shore. Why does it do what it does? Why does it break, and then it slams on the shore, and then energy comes, that water comes flowing back down in an undertow. That water has to go someplace, so it comes flowing back down along the shoreline, but down underneath. But anyway, what causes that wave to break and go into that contorted shape that's kind of like a little wall of water moving in? What happens is underneath, as the shore, as the bottom of the ocean becomes more shallow, as you come in that wave, it's a friction effect. The bottom of the wave, underneath, there's water that's moving along with that. The wave down deep starts to move more slowly. And so the wave on top is trying to move ahead at the rate it's coming in. And so the bottom of the wave is slowing down. So that causes the top of the wave to ride over the bottom of the wave. That's literally what happens. And so now you have a little wall of water that comes in, and it raises up. Another factor is that makes the wave slow down. So what happens? It compresses the wave, so all of that wave starts to rise up. What used to be a 10-foot wave now becomes a 20-foot wall of water coming in. Understand what I'm saying? And that water raises up, and it comes in, and when it hits the shore, wham! All that energy is expended on the shore, and you can hear it, a big wave coming in, a whoomp! You can hear the energy expended, and then that comes back out, and that water flows back down along underneath the water, back out, and there's this cycle of waves coming in. The same thing, exact same wave theory works with land waves. Okay, now imagine a land wave rolling across the American prairies at around 1,500 miles an hour, 200 feet tall, okay? This maybe 300 feet tall. And it's a whoosh, and there it goes. It's moving across the prairie. All of a sudden, it starts hitting the foothills of, they say, the Rocky Mountains. You see those foothills coming up, and that energy, there's something that's resisting out there. It's called the Rocky Mountains. It's the set of mountains that are already there. It's resisting. They're rising up, and the layers that are underneath are kind of like a bowl. And so now this nice, fast-moving wave of energy through the landmass of the Earth, all of a sudden on the lower side starts to slow down. This wave starts to leap up, and when it hits that mountain range, the first thing it does is it unleashes all that energy into the mountain, and it pushes, it throws up, just like a wave. But rock is a little different. It's not going to fall and come back under like a fluid ocean. It's going to go be pushed up into an upthrust mountain, and it's going to stay there. Okay, let's wait a million years, and the next Planet X type object comes in. Let's say that wave came in from the east. Now let's go to the northeast. Another wave is coming in. Okay, we get another wave coming in. Whoosh, it hits that mountain range. Boom, it's going to twist what's already there. It's going to smash it. It's going to contort it. It's going to push it up, and it's going to push up other plates that were never there before. And this process goes on from the east, from the west, from the southwest, from the northeast, on and on. I would estimate that there are probably 20 major mountain building events in the history of Earth, where mountain ranges all over the Earth, you'll see that things were... You look at the very top of the Rocky Mountains. You go all the way from the southern tips down in as it goes into Mexico, Sierra. You go up that mountain range into the southern Colorado Rockies, and you see these probably 20 major epochs of mountain building. These happened overnight, very quickly, and probably hundreds, if not thousands, of smaller events when smaller objects came by Earth and gave a push here, a shove there. This thing rose up. Their energy went into this, and things, the mountain ranges are just slammed and contorted and pushed from all directions. And this is the conglomerate that you're finally left with. Trying to interpret this is very difficult. If you drive through the mountains, I don't care if it's the Himalayas, the Rocky Mountains, the Andes, I don't care what mountain range you go to, it is going to be contorted and smashed in all directions, and you're going to look at it, and you're going to look at the very highest peaks, and what are you going to see? You're going to see layering, layering, layering. Those layers were built up where? At the bottom of the ocean. Those layers were built up, sedimentary layers that came from the very pits, the very bottom of the ocean, sometimes 5,000 feet underneath the floor of the ocean at that time. As they're thrust up, and then the erosion starts to take place at the top of the mountains, and those layers peel away and erode away over millions of years of erosion. Let's talk about erosion factors. Some people think, well, it's rain or it's wind. No, not really. A lot of the peaks get snow, and then when the sun comes out, it melts. Well, what happens? That seeps into the rock, and it seeps into cracks and crevices, and then when it freezes, it expands and it breaks. So the rock comes tumbling off in big chunks. I would love sometime to have a movie going back in time 10,000, 20,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago, and look at the Rocky Mountains that were there then, and look and then see the big passages of these Planet X kind of objects as they come through the solar system and torment and torture the Earth and send up these mountain ranges, and then they're eroded, then glaciers come. Understand that the glaciers, this is something they talk about, the glaciers in the United States. The remnant that you see today, they're just little teeny patches of snow that don't melt over the winter time. These are not the Great Lake glaciers of old, which happened, by the way, within the last 10,000 years, four of them. This means that the Earth has been slammed, not directly hit, but the passage of these large Planet X objects has happened at least four times in the last 10,000 years. And these massive glaciers build up, and it's snowing on them, and snowing, and the glaciers are pushing down through the valleys and wiping out, scratching out, tearing out rock and debris and pushing it down these vast alpine valleys, leaving lakes and leaving 10,000-foot peaks exposed that some go up to the 10, 14,000 feet. And then the valleys exposed where these glaciers wiped it out. And today, those glaciers are not there anymore. Those have long since melted and that water is gone. We see tremendous wash areas that go down, for example, through New Mexico. They go down through Oregon. The state of Oregon is a vast area of it's a big wash area. So at any rate, the point is that the Earth is a tortured Earth. Standard science wants to tell you that the Earth just all jumped up one day and over billions of years just all did all this by itself, which is absolutely absurd, ridiculous, but that again, that's the fairy tale science that they want to pound off on the public. Remember, go to my webpage. Remember to get your 2-CD set. There's 18 hours of lectures. There's 21 different topics on the first CD with 13 hours and about 5 hours on the second CD with 12 different topics. A monumental effort. It's something that you will want to get. And I also sell it 2 sets. So you can get that. I'll give out the mail order address, JMCC, P.O. Box 58, Navarre, N-A-V-A-R-R-E, Minnesota 55392, or go to the webpage jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night. By the way, the CD costs $16.95 for the set or $23.95 for 2 sets. That both prices include shipping. Good night.